by and large, autoimmune disease. Yeah, there's genetic component, obviously, but then there is the lifestyle that pulls the trigger. Lifestyle can reverse it heavily. We were all uneducated on our bodies and on nutrition. 70 to 80% of your immune system is in your gut. So I'll hear that a lot. I don't really have digestive symptoms that I see on this list for Hashimoto's. Do I still need to work on gut healing? Yes. If you have antibodies, yes.
When you're so self-critical, when you're always putting yourself down, when you're always judging yourself, you're attacking yourself. And the body kind of mimics that.
When I thought my body was attacking itself, I was miserable. I don't think we heal. I just see people kick their own butts.
Oh man,
years of chronic stress. This is all my fault. You have to let that shit go if you want to move on and heal.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Cancer Proof Living. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Michelle, a 9-year non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer survivor, a mom, and a certified integrative nutrition health coach. And after cancer, I wanted more than just survival, so I built the healing roadmap that I couldn't find. Now I guide survivors and cancer-conscious humans to detox, rebuild, and thrive. In this episode, I chatted with Allison Maras. Allison is a holistic nutritionist, published author of the Paleo Gut Healing Cookbook, and gut health expert specializing in autoimmune disease and food sensitivities. After putting her own Hashimoto's, PCOS, and IBS into remission, she made it her own mission to help other women heal chronic digestive symptoms without restrictive elimination diets. As the creator of the Intune Method, she's guided hundreds of clients to reintroduce foods with confidence, reduce inflammation, and to get off the elimination diet roller coaster for good. With over a decade in the wellness space, Allison is passionate about simplifying gut healing and nourishing our bodies with more joy and peace. Check out her delish free recipes on foodbymars.com and connect with her more below. This episode is truly packed with so much information, like how to really tune into your body, lifestyle habits that can lead to autoimmune disorders and disease, and foods to really focus on to really understand what works with your body and not against it. I had the best time talking with Allison, and this episode does not disappoint. So grab a pen and paper because you will definitely need it. Let's get it started. Allison, I'm so excited to have you on. I know it took a couple of tries, so this has been the best morning already because I'm able to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Same here. Thank you for having me, Michelle.
Yes. So I want you to start off today because you have had such a journey. I know you personally have gone through Hashimoto's, PCOS, IBS. When did you really first realize that something deeper was going on with your health and in your body and not just having like random symptoms? And I also, twofold question, I also want to know like what your life was like what you were eating, what you were doing, what your lifestyle was like as all of this was kind of unfolding as well.
Yeah. So I think I normalized pain and a lot of symptoms for a very long time. And this is what I'll hear from my clients as well. I'm sure you hear it all the time where it's like, well, when I look back, there were like a lot of issues for a while. So my whole life, I would say I had digestive issues. I had probably some food sensitivities with dairy, especially, and for sure, really bad periods. Like once I was 13 and I got my first period, it was like already very painful and all the things. And so I used to spend 2 days each month home with a heating pad, like eating chips and taking painkillers, literally. And there was just nothing that could be done. And so I got on the birth control pill at age 18 because there was no other answer for me on what to do with it. And it was supposed to fix everything, so to speak. I stayed on the pill for about 10 years. And when I got off in my late 20s, everything went nuts. And that was the big turning point that something was very, very wrong. All my hair started falling out. That was one of the first big things that I was just like, wait, there's a lot of hair on the floor. This is not right.
How long was it between coming off the pill and like those first symptoms? Was it like 3 months or was it like a year? Because I know it takes a minute.
Yeah, it was probably 2 to 3 months. And, you know, at first I was, and we had kind of just moved apartments. So literally like my bathroom floor was a different color. I remember thinking that I'm like, is this just what my hair looks like on this color bathroom floor? Like it was just weird timing for that stuff. I'm like, something's not right. And I noticed it was like much drier and like something didn't feel right. And you know, when you're losing hair, like I had these weird cowlicks in different places in my hair. So I get like these weird little short waves or whatever. I'm just like, something's not right here. My period came back with a vengeance. It was like I was never on the pill at all because that was the only thing like suppressing it. And suddenly I'm like, okay, this was clearly a big Band-Aid and a big lie. They told me even if I stayed on it for just 6 months, it would reset and fix my period. I've been on it 10 years. It did nothing. So I start connecting the dots. And I'm like, first of all, I was completely sold a lie here. And then now my body is clearly going through something major. My digestion started suffering a lot. I was just reacting to a lot of foods. I'd get hives on the back of my skin. I had all these little like, it's, you know, the KP, the chicken skin kind of thing. Everything from skin to hair to nails to my digestion. And then my mood started as well, where I just felt very sad, very down, brain foggy. And that's not me. That's just not me. And so to answer your second question, my life at that time was working in New York City, climbing the corporate ladder, work hard, play hard, happy hours every Thursday with my team because we were just like trauma bonded from being overworked in corporate America. And that was the vibe. I was normalizing this high level of stress all the time, this very high chronic level of stress. Living in the city, you know, it's not the cleanest in New York City, right? Like living in an apartment.
Yeah, you're exposed.
Yeah, you're supposed to. I'm on the subway constantly at all hours of the day, you know, all these things. And so that's what I remember. There was a lot of takeout food, you know, in small New York City apartments. You're not really cooking. You don't have even time to cook. And so it was a lot of Thai takeout and, you know, all these things. So that's when I started thinking to myself, I would go to doctors and I was getting zero answers. I was getting the, you know, most garbage treatment, 5 minutes in, 5 minutes out. I don't know. You don't look fat. There's nothing wrong with you. Like, this is stuff I was told by like top endocrinologists in NYU. Because even as my hair was falling on all these things, my mom is like, you need to get your thyroid checked. Something's not right.
Oh, so she already had like an intuition around it.
My mom had that intuition. And she also worked for doctors for a long time in her career. And she was like, I really think you need your thyroid checked. And I'm like, okay, well, don't they just do that? You know, I was ignorant to all this. I was just, don't think.
Yeah. Like, isn't that on my normal panel? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. A blood panel doesn't mean they're checking every single thing. They have to choose what they're looking for. And so I remember I was going to endocrinologist and that's what I was told. No, you don't look like you have any issues. I'm like, I'm losing all my hair. What do you mean? Also, you don't know what my normal weight is. Just because I'm generally like a tall and thin statured, like, doesn't mean you know what my normal is. And so I let them dismiss me for a while. And then I was like, okay, I get it. No one's coming to save me. I need to figure this stuff out. I went back to school to learn nutrition. I started changing things on my own. I started home cooking. That's kind of how I started my blog, was just like, okay, I'm going to try to make this fun. I'm going to try to make this really delicious and kind of replace the meals that I miss. And that's really how I started pulling at the thread and going deep on everything.
So you kind of started at that point to realize, like, why is this happening to me? Let's just redo everything that's kind of going on in my life. And you start to make those changes and start to make those shifts.
Exactly.
It's so wild that even now in this day and age that doctors are still dismissing kind of like these silent symptoms like that and not doing full panels of blood work to really figure out what's going on. Same as you, I had Hashimoto's. It's reversed now. I had Hashimoto's and right after my second daughter. And I went in and I'm like, my hair's thinning. I cannot lose a pound of my life dependent on it. I'm not fat, I'm not overweight, but like, this isn't my norm. And like, something's off. Like, you know when your body's off. And this is a neuroendocrinologist at Northwestern here in Chicago, top three in the country, blah, 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 right? Because I had like other issues before. Didn't even do an antibody test or everything. And all of my thyroid panels were always in the normal range, maybe low to normal. On the lower side of the normal range, but you're always in the normal range. So I didn't qualify for any of that. And it wasn't until I started doing functional testing, like Dr. Mark Hyman's functional testing, actually, they tested antibodies and I found, oh, I have Hashi's. And I had to take that blood work to my neuroendocrinologist and be like, hey, this is what's going on. And he's like, oh, da, da, da. But like when I look back at the, I get the classic signs of Hashimoto's. And, you know, even though it didn't, you know, affect my blood work yet, you know, and he literally told me, my neuroendocrinologist, he goes, well, I'm not going to put you on meds because like you're still within normal range, but like we'll wait for it to affect you. And once it affects you, I'll put you on meds.
That was the last thing I was told as well by a doctor. But I think the key thing for everyone to know is like, first of all, they're checking TSH and maybe T4, and that's it. And there's so many other lab markers that they'd want to check, like T3, the antibodies that you mentioned. And so it's not the full picture. That's number one. And then number two is their ranges are so huge, it's not even optimal ranges. And so bioindividuality is first, where it's like, it might be like one mark off, but for you, that is drastically affecting your body when you're listening to the symptom. My hair's thinning. I can't lose any weight. Why do I feel so exhausted? All these things. And so that's what I realized. I did the same thing where I went to a naturopath who diagnosed. She's like, girl, you got Hashimoto's. I had like antibodies in the hundreds and my T3 looked awful. They hadn't ever tested the T3. And that made sense because I was like losing all my hair. I had no energy. And so I went back to my blood and I'm like, wait, the signs are there. They just aren't reading them that way.
And you're not crazy.
Exactly. You're not crazy to say something is not right with my body. I mean, I was 27, 28 when I'm going to these doctors and they're like, maybe you're just aging. I'm like, that's your best guess? That's what we're doing in my 20s.
It makes me honestly feel so sad because like, imagine an average person that's just listening to their doctors, because that's what we're told to do, is to listen to our doctors, and not going above and beyond and finding out these answers. And they think, I'm just aging. This is just my new reality. I mean, I know for me, like living with brain fog was one of the worst feelings I've ever had, to not be able to focus, to concentrate, in that like debilitating fatigue that it brings on. Like you just feel like you're a shell of who you were. It's so horrible. It's so horrible.
Exactly. It's such a perfect way to say it. It's so true. And what's worse is like, you don't look sick thing. So it's like, you're also just being gaslit the whole time. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. I feel like I would walk out and I'm like, maybe I'm just being vain. Like, okay, so I gained a few pounds, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, like, this isn't my normal stature. You know, like, it's not about being vain. It's about how you feel at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
You brought up so many good points. So I want to like take a step back. When you were talking about getting your thyroid tested and you started to name off what things people should get tested for your thyroid, you mentioned TSH, T4, T3. What else can you mention?
So also the TPO antibodies, those are like the really big ones that really make you feel crummy. Joint pain, it can contribute to the food sensitivities and gut issues, the mood stuff, the brain fog, all of that. The thyroglobulin antibodies as well. And then I really like to also take a look at some of the nutrients that are responsible for converting from the T4 inactive form of the hormone to the T3 form of the hormone. So iodine, selenium, taurine, zinc, those are really critical. And that's another big problem with the Western medicine testing, the lab testing, is that if you're only looking at T4 and it looks okay, but what does that say about how it's being converted? This is also an issue of like just slapping you on Synthroid when your body still needs to take that T4, because that's what Synthroid is, and turn it into active hormone that your cells will actually use. So this is why so many people can actually be put on Synthroid and still feel terrible. And so we see it a lot. That's one of the most commonly prescribed drugs. So we see that a lot where it's like, look, I am not against thyroid medication. I love thyroid medication. It can be so helpful whether you go the more natural route or you do the synthetic. Everyone's different in what their body needs and will respond to. It's basically like hormone replacement therapy. So you want to keep an open mind and get it from a good source. But we also need to make sure the environment that the medication is being received in, the ingredients that your body has to then go do something with the medication, is on par. That's where nutrition comes in. That's where all the things that you talk about that we were just mentioning, like the low tox living and all of that, managing your stress, getting into, you know, into bed and addressing all these things that could be happening at the more root cause level, like gut issues or environmental exposures. It's so critical so that the medicine actually even helps at all.
You're 100% right. You need the raw materials and the foundation or nothing can be built, right? It's just throwing, it's a drop in the ocean. That's my functional doctor. It's a drop in the ocean. Everything is, and same with like the gut. Like if your gut's not healed, you can do all the right things, but you can't absorb, you can't get better, you know? So you've made such wonderful points, but okay, so you started to make your own changes, cooking more at home, eating better. Did you end up, you said that you were actually diagnosed through a naturopath doctor. And through that doctor, that's how you learned your root causes? Or did you start to undergo testing to learn your root causes? And what were your root causes that, you know, kind of lit the match to all of this?
Yeah, she was great at taking me through that process of like, okay, we need to do some gut testing. We need to take it from the, you know, we'll start there, take it from there, because that's when I was obviously learning that 70 to 80% of your immune system is in your gut. So if you have an autoimmune disease like Hashimoto's, even if you do not have classic digestive symptoms, because I'll hear that a lot of like, I don't really have digestive symptoms that I see on this list for Hashimoto's. Like, do I still need to work on gut healing? Yes. If you have antibodies, yes. So we went through that and I found SIBO, I found parasites, like all these imbalances. I was missing beneficial bacteria that I needed because I was not breastfed. I was on antibiotics since I was like a baby, you know, a classic 80s baby over here, just like getting bombing my gut every chance I could, apparently. Eating the standard American diet, chronically stressed, rushing my meals, right? Like, I often talk about digestion hygiene because we can do these fancy functional stool testing and we can do these protocols, but if you are not maintaining good hygiene every single day with what you're eating, how you're eating, managing your stress, just taking care of the machine, so to speak, well, how's it going to go? It's another drop in the bucket, like zero drop in the ocean. It's kind of like going to the dentist twice a year and expecting that to be all you need to do. And you don't brush your teeth every day and you don't floss every day. Like, obviously, that's not going to go well. It's going to be a mess when you go to the dentist.
That's a perfect analogy. That's seriously the perfect analogy because nothing is more true. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like sometimes we'll get, you know, we'll all just see like magic pill mentality with some of the functional testing or whatever. And it's like, you can throw data at the wall all you want, but it's like, are you doing the do? Are you really shifting your lifestyle in the day-to-day? By and large, autoimmune disease, yeah, there's genetic component, obviously, but then there is the lifestyle that pulls the trigger. So that means lifestyle can reverse it heavily, right?
Absolutely. And I feel like it's just, as so many people are being diagnosed with autoimmune, right? It's like, and of course, I think it's 80% is women. Like, we are really plagued with it, right? Probably because of a lot of birth control and things that, you know, make us more prone to it, so to speak. But I think that it is truly, at the end of the day, the most important thing to change your lifestyle. It is 99% of all of it, at least if you're like managing an autoimmune disease, because we know the genetics are just a handful out there. It is not a majority of it. So earlier you were talking about how normal blood ranges versus optimal blood ranges, which is such a great point. I don't know why we do these like norms. You know, my normal is not going to be the same as someone that's 10 years older than me, that's much bigger than me, or whatever the case is, right? So like, you know, we have to get down to these more like bioindividual markers. But tell me the difference between normal and optimal. So like the audience, and like how do you explain it to your clients so we can understand it in a better way? And then my audience at least can take away and know like, okay, this is what is supposed to be optimal for me, or how to look for it, or how to advocate for it.
Yeah. I actually have a table, like a side-by-side of like what's Western medicine reference range versus what's optimal. I'm going to give you the link, Michelle, so that everyone can have it. Print it out. I want to say one of the first things I recommend is when you are getting tested, you can bring something like that to your doctor and say, these are the markers I want. Don't take no for an answer. Plenty of times.
Like to your PCP or your endocrinologist or something?
Yeah, to your PCP, your endocrinologist, even an OBGYN might do it. Take it to someone you trust that will be open and just say like, hey, just can you run these for me? And I want a copy. You say, I want a copy. You don't just go to the portal and or hear from an email or from a call, like everything was fine. Nope. That's what kept me on the scenic route for way too long. So I always say, like, it is your body, please get a copy and then match it side by side. And even if it's a little bit off, if you are symptomatic, there's something there. There's just something there. It doesn't mean maybe you immediately need to jump to Medicare, but we do need to support the thyroid. I also just want to say, as modern day humans, we need to support our thyroids because it's so superficial and a lot of toxins can bind to it. You know, heavy metals, like things like that. So we always want to love on it. It's our body clock or our thermostat, and it does so much for us. That's why when it is on the fritz, even just a little bit off, we feel all these things. Like the symptoms just run the gamut and they hit us in the mirror first, they hit us in digestion, and then here in our, like our mood or the brain fog, exactly like you said. It's like, it's this snowball effect where if I wasn't losing all my hair, I probably would have brushed this under the rug eventually too. You know what I mean? But it had to hit me right in the mirror every single day for me to be like, I'm going to actually not be the good girl anymore and just listen to the doctor. And I'm going to go rogue because I'm not going bald right now. Like, that's not what's happening. You know, for an inexplainable reason, no one could tell me why. No one could tell me maybe I'm aging at 27. I don't think so. So that was the insane part. It wasn't like there was a reason. So I just want to say that. So, okay, back to your question about the lab. So I also mentioned in that cheat sheet, like the nutrients and all these other things that you would want to be eating, how you can best get them. But we really want to think in terms of, okay, especially if the antibodies are high, even if my thyroid looks okay from both perspectives, I know that I still need to be supporting my gut and supporting my thyroid through adrenal support, blood sugar balance, you know, getting those great nutrients in, reducing my toxic load, swap the secret deodorant, right? Like get rid of all these things that I know are problematic and just giving my body more work to do. So I think that that's really a critical thing, and minding that bioindividuality, understanding that exactly right what you said, the reference range includes a lot of different women or even men in some of these markers, right? And it's like, but that's not what my body needs. This isn't working for my body, you know? So your symptoms still matter, even if the labs aren't giving us the exact story, you know?
Yeah. And so if you have a client that comes to you and they're dealing with all of this stuff too, how do you, because it can be so overwhelming to dig into these lifestyle changes, right? There's nutrition, like you said, there's low toxin living, there's cleaning up your environment, there's reducing stress and managing stress, there's controlling your blood sugar. Where do you start and why do you first start there?
I try to be as prescriptive as possible, right? Because not everyone needs to, like a lot of people will come to me that they're already eating pretty well. You know, they've already done a lot of the recommendations, like they cut out gluten, they're eating a lot of full foods, they're predominantly home cooking. And so it might be one or two things that we need to tweak. It might be more like, hey, they're eating well, but their blood sugar is like still really imbalanced. They're skipping meals, they're not prepping. They're skipping breakfast because they're trying to lose weight and they think that's what's going to do it. And it's actually making it a million times worse. I see it 9 out of 10 times. It is making it worse.
Especially women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're always the ones that want to lose weight and they can't because of that. So sometimes it's tweaks like that.
Wait, tell people why it makes it worse if you skip breakfast and you're trying to lose weight.
So especially with thyroid and adrenal issues. Okay. What we're doing, what we always need to do as a foundational thing is balance blood sugar. This is one of the biggest shifts that you can make. And so when we are sort of riding this hypoglycemic blood sugar roller coaster, by not giving ourselves breakfast in the morning, we're usually going to reach for caffeine because we need something at some point. And then we're just like trying to power through to lunch. What happens is our body doesn't feel safe. It feels like it might faint. We get a little shaky, a little hangry, a little like we're craving caffeine, we're craving sugar. And we think it's us. We think it's like a sweet tooth, but no, it's hypoglycemia. It's a blood sugar issue. And your body knows sugar will quickly perk you up. And that's what it's trying to do, is trying to keep you alive. Because if you faint, that's life-threatening. You could hit your head. A predator could come pick you off, right? Our bodies are still stuck back there. So that's what I always try to teach people. And so because of that, your adrenals and your blood sugar are so related and your adrenals get involved in a couple of ways. One, because it's an emergency situation and you're now adrenaline is kicking in and all these things. And then also it will go to your liver and loosen some of the stored sugar and activate it that way. So you might get a little burst. At the same time, you're reaching for that granola bar at work or that cappuccino or whatever. And this is how we get just sugar overload. Now we've got like PCOS, insulin resistance issues, right? Like all these problems, weight gain, right? Like all these metabolic issues, because this is how we're running every day. Up and down and up and down. We're not getting enough protein.
And you're not going to lose weight if your blood sugar is completely dysregulated every single day. And to piggyback off that too, it's also really important for cancer prevention. You know, we know that, let's be honest, chronically disturbed blood sugar is the precursor for so many things. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, you know, you name it. They are calling Alzheimer's the type, or type 3 diabetes, right? Like it is everything. If there's one thing in life that you can do to help improve your health, it's to learn how to balance blood sugar, you know? And of course, that leads to weight loss. And sometimes us as women and everything, it takes that, you know, something so physical with our appearance to shake us and wake us up to realize, okay, like there's something bigger playing at hand here. And like, what is it? And why is it chronically elevated? And why is, you know, perfect example, why is skipping breakfast? You're setting yourself up to fail. Your cortisol is being, and you know, if your blood sugar is spiked, your cortisol spiked, right? All of these things, it's putting constant stress on the body and you're putting yourself essentially in fight or flight, you know, starting your day off in that way. And your body's not getting the nutrients it needs. So it's going to hold on to weight longer because of that. Correct me if I'm wrong, for sure.
100%. It is that safety issue. It's the metabolic issue. It is just like, then you're craving sugar. Like you're not going to make the best decisions. It's not, a lot of people think it's them. I have a sweet tooth. It's like, everyone has a sweet tooth, whether it's cake that they're looking for or chips, you know? It's like, we all have that in us because we know that that can save us. That is a quick source of fuel. So knowing how to build your plate to take you 3, 4, 5 hours to your next meal, whatever it's going to be, is really critical. And so protein, starting savory is something that I always say for breakfast, is something that you're going to want to do. I had like sausage and sauteed arugula this morning in good olive oil with lemon juice, and I'm going to be fine till 12:30. Like I'm going to be fine. So that's what I mean, is like, you won't have to run off caffeine and you won't have to worry about so much of these issues when you actually just break the wheel and eat breakfast. The other thing that I want to say is it's foundational to hormone balance. So it affects our thyroid, because if it affects our adrenals, it affects our thyroid. It also affects just female hormones, estrogen, progesterone, everything. So what happens is, I like to call, for people who know who the Brady Bunch is, I like to say that your adrenals are the Marsha Brady of your endocrine system. It's the favorite child. And for good reason. Your body favors your adrenals because they will keep you alive in the face of danger. If you need to run from a predator, your adrenals are going to make you run fast. You know, it's that kind of the adrenaline, right? If you're about to faint, your adrenals are going to save you again. They're incredible. It's just that when you need them every single day to save your life,
that's a problem, right? And you get adrenal fatigue. You can't tap into it all the time. There's not going to be any reserve left.
Exactly. So what happens is the body very intelligently says, well, Michelle runs off adrenals all day. So we're going to give all the raw materials to adrenals to create adrenaline, cortisol, all the things. Sorry, thyroid. You can't get your T4. Sorry, ovaries. No progesterone and estrogen for you. Like, this is what's happening. It's like, this is why we hear of like, oh, when you're chronically stressed, your body's being robbed. It is. It has to be distributed differently. And your body isn't wrong. That's the thing. It's not a broken body here. It's responding to what you're giving it. So much power lies, like you said, in just learning how to balance your blood sugar.
Yeah, everything. And it's such a good point. Everything we're doing, obviously thinking too, eating is communication to our body. It's communication to ourselves. We are constantly instructing it on what to do. So if we're skipping that breakfast in the morning, we're saying, okay, well, when we do get food and nutrients, we're going to suppress everything else because it has to go to the area that needs it most, right? So your sex hormones get, you know, you're not going to lose weight. Your sex hormones get pushed out, like everything that's not in dire, you know, need. And that's why I feel like living in just chronic stress too, and that chronic fight or flight all the time, the tiger's always chasing you, it just puts our hormones through a tailspin. And One of, we had a guest on here too. She was a hormone specialist and she was saying, you know, the hormones are so interconnected. If you bump one, all of them are affected, you know, so they're all touching each other. So you can't just say, well, that's not going to affect that hormone. It's only going to affect this hormone. It just doesn't work that way because we're just so interconnected.
Because they all share those raw materials. They're all like trying to get enough, you know? And so what are you using the most?
Yeah. So for clients that are, let's say they're a vegetarian or they don't eat eggs and they want protein first thing in the morning, what do you direct them towards? This is the question I get asked to a lot. And I have like my go-tos in the back pocket, but like, I feel like it's harder for whole food sources when you're a little bit more restricted or limited.
I would say if they would do a protein powder, look, protein powders, you don't want to lean on a lot. Every day they're coming out with, oh, but this one's now garbage and this one's not a good source. And it's like, again, yeah, it's like, once again, eat whole foods. but I would say if you, because sometimes I'll just have people where it's like, yeah, but I can't have eggs every day or I can't. And I'm like, oh, okay, so let's switch it up with like a smoothie. I love Equip is a great brand it's beef. It's beef isolate. So I'm still going to say, okay, if you're not having it because of like it's weirding you out or something like that, it's more like that kind of issue. If it's ethical, there's probably nothing I can say, you know, that's going to make someone want to try meat, except you could go watch the documentary Sacred Cow and see if that helps. But I would say maybe open your world a little bit more to that stuff because it's extremely difficult. For that reason, I don't work with vegans. I can't help them because the way that I work and the way I was trained is largely, it's nutritional therapy. And a big part of that is going to be from animal sources and eating seasonally and all that, love plants too and all the things. But that is one of the staples of my diet and my client's diet. One of the most powerful things you can do to balance blood sugar is going to be a little bit more animal protein. So see what you can do. Absolutely, there are good protein powders out there, but that's not going to be, we're talking breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You need this protein. So that's what I would say. Yes, some beans could be great, but the amount of beans you would need to eat to get the amount of protein and specifically the enough amino acids from that protein, you know? So there's certain levels of amino acids in protein and it's not the same in plant. It's different than in animal. So the amount of beans you'd have to eat, you'd wreck your gut. You'd be a mess. No one would want to be around you if you catch my drift. Like
I went vegetarian. This was probably like 4 years ago. It was actually right before I was diagnosed with Hashi's. I went vegetarian for like 6 months, which is really hard because I love animal protein. I love animal meat. I've never been somebody that doesn't. And I felt the sickest I've ever felt when I was doing the vegetarian. I feel like looking back now, I know my blood sugar was probably on just like this horrible roller coaster. I know I had a little bit of leaky gut. The beans made it worse for me. Even now, like I have to very much limit them. Like I get very inflamed by certain like beans and by grains. Obviously with Hashi's, like I avoid soy and I avoid gluten and dairy. But I do avoid those too because my body just held on to it. Like it held on to like 7 pounds of weight. When I stopped eating beans and rice, I lost 7 pounds of inflammation is what it really was. And it was so eye-opening to me. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I feel so different and so much better. Again, to anyone that's listening, that's my story. That's not for everybody. Everybody is different with how they tolerate things. It's just a journey. I'm like, you have to be your own advocate and try different things to see what feels good for you. Like for me, I never thought that would be it, but I was eating a diet that was very grain heavy. I was eating oatmeal. I was eating beans. I was eating quinoa. I was doing all the right healthy foods, the vegetarian healthy foods that I thought were it for me. And it just did the total opposite. And I never felt worse. But I'm like grateful for that experience because now I look back, I'm like, okay, I know what works for me. I know that that really inflamed, you know, everything that I was going through. But it's just so interesting when you think about that. And you're talking about amino acids. I take additional amino acids now too. Like I eat a lot of animal meat, but I do amino acids in the morning before I walk and stuff. And it's such a game changer. I'm so addicted to them. And like, it helps with hair growth, with muscle, building muscle. Like, I'm obsessed. Yeah. So that's such a good tip.
They're pretty magical. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, that's the building blocks in the body. So when we want to heal tissue, when we, you know, it's going to be a game changer. So you'll just get more bang for your buck if you would open up to that. So if for anyone, you know, listening, it's like, not trying to be dismissive. Both of us were vegetarians. I was a vegetarian for a while. I tried to be vegan for a while. I felt the same. It's like good at first because it's like, oh, I'm eating vegetables.
Right.
So that was a good thing. But then it turned sideways pretty quickly. And I remember my doctor at the Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, who's like the protein queen, was actually my physician, my functional doctor in New York City for a while. And she was like, 30 grams of protein, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You have to do it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I've got to do. And it did make a huge difference. And then my husband was kind of like, please let me make you liver. You will grow your hair. Please, will you eat it? I'm like, I would eat chalk right now if you told me to. Sure, let's cook it up. I will try. And he made it delicious. And I have this recipe on my blog if you guys want it. But it's like lemon and garlic. And, you know, you can use a little wine if you want, or bone broth. And that's another thing. But it's like, there are some great hair supplements. Love those too. But it's like, you could eat some of these things and it can make a huge difference. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So how long were you working with your functional doctor or your naturopath before you started to see some like significant real changes in all of, you know, the IBS and the PCOS and everything? Like, how long did it take for you to kind of reverse that?
You know, I would say I felt a little bit like I was like two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back, only because the work that I was doing with them was great. And it was what they are meant to help with, which is to be diagnostic and to run labs and then give me the protocol or the medicine or whatever. It also took me a while to find my proper thyroid medication dose, I would say. Like, it's not just like they put you on medicine, your life is fixed. You got to keep testing. You have to make sure you find the right dose, find the right, because I started immediately with natural desiccated thyroid. And then we like messed around with different versions, different brands, see what works. So It was a while. I would say from once I got diagnosed to actually getting into remission, it was probably 2 years. And the reason being, like, it took me a while with all the, like, I got to get rid of SIBO. It kept coming back. I got to get rid of it. I kept coming back. I had it 3 times in a year once.
Oh, wow.
And that's just because my environment wasn't changing enough. I was still in that very stressful work atmosphere. I had a lot of grief. I had 3 losses in a year as well from my family. And that was very difficult. You can't control some of these things. It's just life. What else? I mean, I was going back to school. I was doing school again, too. So I was like going back to school. There was a lot of things like that. And truly, like, that lifestyle shift, it takes time. And I needed to rebuild resilience. I needed to say, okay, while all these moving pieces are happening, I'm trying protocols, I'm trying supplements, like, how am I managing my stress? What am I eating, right? Am I balancing my blood sugar? And so that's all the stuff I learned from going back to school that kind of took me the distance. And that's what got me into remission. That's what keeps me in remission, you know, so many years later. So that's why I think you and I are both such advocates of, like, we love functional medicine, we love the functional doctors, but they are still diagnostic. They are still doctors. We have to do the work in the day-to-day. And that's where we are coming in, right? Where we're trying to, like, help people with, whether it's swapping stuff in the pantry, stuff on your personal care products, and all these other things that really add up and make a huge difference.
Yeah. And I think your story is so special and so important. And I'm so glad you're being so honest about it and open too, because I think in social media, people will see these before and afters, like, oh, I had SIBO and I fixed my gut. And now they're like ripped and toned and, like, you know, and nobody is talking about this period in this journey of trial and error, right? Like you were saying, I had to figure out the dose. Everybody does, right? It's not just you. So if people are listening, I think it's important to know that it's not like healing is not linear. It's going to be a roller coaster. It's going to be up and down. And it's going to twist and turn. It might work for a while and then stop. You might take two steps forward and think you're doing everything right, and then realize, oh gosh, I made some mistakes and I have to go back, and or I took too many carbs out, or I went too low, or I overdid it on like probiotic rich foods. And my gut's a little messed up. Like you have to like find your balance, and like all of that is okay. And I think it's important to like celebrate that piece of the journey. And yes, like being in remission is great, but you learn the most when you are going through it yourself. And that is key, because nobody is you, right? I think for me, like I learned so much through my journey. And like, I remember when I was diagnosed with Hashi's, gosh, this was, my daughter's going to be 5. So this had to be like 3 years ago. It was 3 years ago that I was diagnosed. And so I was about, gosh, 5 or 6 years in remission from cancer. And I remember thinking like, I can't handle something else. Like, oh my gosh, now I have to, like, I've already redone my whole life because of cancer. And now I have this autoimmune issue. And now I have to redo everything again and like kind of start over. And I felt so depressed and disappointed. Like, how did I let this happen? And like, you know, you just kind of go through the ringer in that. And then I realized it put me on this path to understand health in such a deeper way, where it was like, yeah, I was eating great. Yeah, I was moving my body and I'm walking and I'm balancing my blood sugar and I'm, you know, doing all the cancer prevention things that I talk about. But it put me on this path of low toxin living and, oh my God, my environment. And, oh, well, nobody told me to stay on a prenatal for 5 years after I had my last daughter. I stopped when I stopped breastfeeding. So I lost so many different nutrients. Oh, I had mold in my, 3 times the amount of mold in my body than a normal person, and 3 different types of mold. All things that make my body an environment for cancer on top of it, right? So like when I think about cancer prevention in general, that is the umbrella for autoimmune, for thyroid health, for balancing hormones, for balancing blood sugar. Like, this is not separate issues. This is all underneath it. And I remember telling my neuroendocrinologist, I'm like, I'm a cancer survivor. You think I'm just going to sit here and wait for this low level of inflammation to attack me to a point and to put my body back into an environment where cancer could possibly grow? Like, you're out of your fucking mind. Like, I'm not doing that. And I found a functional doctor to help me go through the testing, and it taught me, you know, the full, like, I thought I knew the full picture of health, but like the real full picture of health, which now just only benefits my clients more, and like my messages on Instagram and just how to help people, because we're all in it together. If I'm struggling, I'm going to figure out a solution and help you, and vice versa. And I know like that's how you do it too. So I went off on a tangent. Sorry about that. But
no, it was a great tangent. And I also, can I just call something out? You mentioned a grieving period that you had to go through with the diagnosis. Like, I don't want to minimize that. That is huge. And like, for sure, I went through that too, where it's like, at first it's like, oh my God, finally answers, right? I went from being told maybe you're aging to like, no, 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 you're not crazy. This is what's happening. Here's the diagnosis. And at first it was like, oh my, okay. Okay. And then it's like, oh my God, now what? You know, and same with you, where I'm like, but I'm doing so much already. I had already been being so proactive, I was already being very proactive about food and all this stuff that I'm like, wow, and I'm on a new journey.
Yeah, now I have to start over.
Yeah, now I'm on this new leg of the journey. So, you know, something that I often say that I read by Jessica Flanagan in The Loving Diet, I don't know if you ever read that, but is a great, great book. And it's a line, something to the effect of, your healing journey is your relationship to it. And that just, when that really landed, I saw that I was such a perfectionist. I was kicking my own butt. Like you said, how could I let this happen? Trust me, I've been there. And we take it all on, this blame game. So many clients have come to me too, because I think that there's a type A perfectionistic.
That's a commonality.
It is a commonality with Hashi's and autoimmune. I joke.
And cancer.
Oh, I'm sure.
All my cancer survivor clients, everyone, we're all like successful, managing so much. Yes.
That's why I think it's 80% women. Yeah, that's why I think autoimmune is 80% women, and that I kind of like tongue in cheek say, like, I feel like the A in type A must stand for autoimmune at some point, right? Like where it's like we're stuck in this hypervigilant mode. So of course our immune system is too, our nervous system is. And so I just see people kick their own butt so much of like, oh man, years of chronic stress and all the antibiotics, this is all my fault. And it's just like, everyone is doing their best. You have to let that shit go if you want to move on and heal. And still, I mean, because we're moms, right? We have to make hard decisions every day for other humans. You know, no pressure.
Keeping humans alive.
Yeah. How many times do I have those thoughts and those intrusive thoughts of like, what if you make the wrong decision? What if something happens? What if they get sick? What? And I have to at a certain point be like, you know what? It's better than indecision at this point. Like I have to make a decision and be there for them and just keep doing my best. And it's the same for our body. Instead of beating it up, instead of, oh man, you're broken or I should have done better. It's like, no, can we have some compassion? And the thing that I think that messy middle that you're describing between the before and after picture, I think we wouldn't want to skip ahead to the after because it's not just the learning process and the shifting of the product swaps and the diet and now I'm cooking for, yeah, that's all wonderful. And we learn new things about ourselves and maybe we have new passions like you and me, like going back to help other people and, you know, whatever. But the other thing is just the relationship to your body that can happen, like the things that can shift within your confidence and how you nourish yourself or show up is huge. And that process gives you that. That healing process gives you that. Nothing else could. It's like, what do they say? The curse of the lotto. People that win the lotto, they spend it or lose it all like that. You can't jump to that after. You need the messy middle, the learning, the preparing you of like, yes. So sorry, you just had so many good points and I had to call those out.
Oh, that was amazing. It's such an important lesson. And I'm so grateful that you highlighted it. I don't know if you, okay. So last summer I was listening to Dr. Josh Axe's podcast and he had something where him and Gary Brecka were on it and they were doing a podcast together. They were talking about cancer. They're talking about autoimmune. So of course I'm like tuning in and they said something and it just like stuck with me. I was telling a client about this yesterday too, but they were talking about autoimmune and, you know, Dr. Axe always talks about Hashimoto's like a ton. So he was talking about that and he was like, you know, what they say about people who have autoimmune is, you know, autoimmune is essentially your body attacking itself, attacking a part of itself. Right. And a lot of people that have autoimmune have a mental or inner dialogue / narrative that mirrors that. When you're so self-critical, when you're always putting yourself down, when you're always judging yourself, when you're always having that negative loop that's going on in your head, you're attacking yourself. And the body kind of mimics that and how much the body and the mind are so connected between that. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's so simple, but it's so true. Like, I know I'm so hard on myself. I'm so self-critical. I hold myself to such a high standard. I'm such a perfectionist. So I get that. Like, I get how that can happen. And I think a lot of women are more so than men. And so it's just another thing to add where you're like, okay, that mental talk, the mental piece of it, the narrative that we're telling ourselves, it's so incredibly important because, again, it's communication to our body. It's communication to ourselves and just paying attention to that piece of the healing too. Okay, so I know you work one-on-one with people. So if someone comes to you and they're like, okay, just got a Hashi's diagnosis and I'm eating pretty well. Like for me, example, I felt so overwhelmed. I'm like, I don't know where to start. I want to hire a specialist. I want someone that just knows Hashi's inside and out. I don't want to be their most complicated case. I just want someone that's like, this is exactly what we have to do and how to break it down. If someone came to you like that, how would you approach them and how would you help put them on their healing journey? Like what do those steps look like?
Yeah. So the first step is definitely we need their data. We need to understand because one Hashimoto's person is not the same as another. Like you said, you found mold and all these. For me, in the beginning, it was more the gut issues was a big deal. The stress was a big deal. blood sugar, you know, being a mess was a big deal. So we have to look at what those specific root causes and priorities are in the body, because we really like to work smarter, not harder. To your point, it is so overwhelming. So how can we prioritize this and say, hey, when I pull the right levers in my body starts to heal. We don't need to micromanage every single function of the body. Your body was designed to heal and to keep you alive. So that's one gripe I'll say with the attacking itself thing. When I thought my body was attacking itself, I was miserable. I felt like I was living your body attacking itself. I don't think we heal.
Because it breaks the trust between you and your body.
Correct. And everything that I know to be true about our bodies doesn't prove that. Your body wants to be healthy, keep you alive, do all the things. So and there's been a lot of studies to talk about like Epstein-Barr virus or mold or the gut. It's really that body is attacking something that should not be there, and thyroid's getting hit. That's what I say with people, and that's firmly what I believe. So I'm with you, where it's like we are, as type A and all these things, just stuck on hypervigilant mode, and it's almost like we can't calm it down at all, right? And like we can't figure out what the issue is. So I really do think when we feel those feelings of overwhelm, like what do I attack first and what's the to-do list, I really try to simplify and teach people along the way of like, first off, we go just to your root issues. Here's what they are. Like, let's look at that just from a symptom analysis in the beginning.
And would you do blood work? You would do like blood work, gut testing?
Sure. So in the beginning, it's mostly functional symptom analysis, and we graph everything to help us understand where do we need more information, blood, stool, urine, if we do a Dutch or something like that. And so that's when it will like better inform the lab testing. We get going just from symptoms alone to shift the lifestyle or the terrain, the foundations first, because that's got to be in place. Like, I don't care what labs we run. Those things need to be in place. And I can see just from having a conversation with someone what needs to shift. So we shift those things in the day to day. So I start by like, here's what a day to day schedule is going to start to look like. And we go little by little by little. We don't like overnight, here's your whole new life. We start to go little by little. So at least 3 to 6 months, I'm with someone. I teach along the way so that people feel confident, you know, they can turn off some of the podcasts. They can turn off some of the TikToks and all these things, because they don't have to feel like they're chasing a million different answers or solutions at once. They can say, no, this is my personal plan. I'm going to keep putting the recs in and follow it. So that's one critical thing. And then, yes, let's do a GI map stool test. Let's get better labs done, because a lot of times people just don't have good thyroid labs. They just don't have them done right. So we look at that and track it. And so we just go bit by bit by bit. We cover everything from detox to, you know, swapping things in the everyday home kind of situation, personal care products, all that. Food, I give meal plans, I give recipes, I give templates, so that it's not just, here's a list of what you can't eat anymore. No. That was another thing that kind of messed with my healing journey. I was like borderline eating disorder after a while. I was like, wow, I can't eat anything anymore. This is very stressful. So I don't want people going through that. I want them to feel like they're expanding their life, not contracting to heal. Like, we don't heal that way. So I give people really more like, here's what you want to eat. Here's recipes that are delicious. Everyone in the house is going to eat them, I promise. And all of that stuff. So everything starts working together. We never overcorrect with a protocol or a diet. We look at everything and pull the right levers for that person. So that's kind of the way we go. And then if we need to, we certainly track symptoms all along the way. But if we need to do retesting or go deeper on anything, we take it as it comes, basically.
Do you also pair, as you're doing all the lifestyle changes, do you pair or do like supplement recommendations as well to help bridge any gaps or things that they're not getting?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, which makes sense, right? Nutrition, lifestyle. I'm sure you go over movement and exercise, low toxin living. So as you know, and as I know, right, the nervous system, it plays such a big piece in autoimmune healing. How do you teach and coach your clients around how to manage stress properly? And so it's not overwhelming, or, you know, I always tell my clients this, we can never get rid of stress. Stress is always going to be there. There's always going to be something. How we manage it on the day to day is truly the key indicator on whether stress affects our health or we have it under control or more manageable, right? How do you coach your clients around stress management?
Yeah, it's such a good point. I just try to say the same, like, we want to balance it out. We don't want to delete all our life stress, because stress is there because we're doing things in the world. We're taking care of other people, or we have a career that we love, like whatever it is, it's really that piece of like building more resilience with it. And so with the nervous system regulation, absolutely. Nervous system is an overarching umbrella to our health. So we need to look at that. When we have an immune system stuck in hypervigilance, why do we think that is? What's our nervous system doing? So the body needs to feel safe to heal because it needs to know we are safe. Not just be told it with affirmations, it needs to know. So that's what I try to educate people on, is like there is a different language that the body speaks. So what's our posture doing all day? Are we rushing? Are we inhaling our food? You know, how are we reacting to every little email or every little, you know, traffic that when we're driving or, you know, whatever it is, like we have to bring some awareness initially. And then there are some great tools. It can be, and I was just talking about this with some of my clients recently, but I was just like, what are your joy activities? Because I don't know about you, but on my intake forms, I mean, anytime we ask, what's your hobby? Blank.
Really? Oh,
it's always every once in a while I'll get like crocheting or running, and I'm like, no running. Let's talk about it. So I try to also just help people understand, especially that are busy women, working moms, whatever. Like, well, we can bring more joy to the mundane. We can bring more mindfulness to the mundane. Why aren't we playing music when we're cleaning up and doing dishes or something? Why can't we make everything a little bit more mindful and a little bit better? And so we can start there. We can bring mindful into eating, and we should. Mindful eating, that's that digestion hygiene I was talking about. You slow down, take a deep breath, practice gratitude, chew your food really, really well to applesauce consistency so you can actually digest it. So these are really key things that from the get-go will help with the nervous system, help with the gut, everything, because that gut-brain situation is huge. I'm a fan of tapping, meditation, gut centered hypnotherapy, gut brain hypnotherapy, somatic exercises. I really try to help people find what's going to work well for them that they're going to like. And it is totally trial and error, but mindfulness is one of the lowest barrier ways to just like, okay, I'm in my body. I'm putting my phone away. I'm going to be present with whomever and whatever I'm doing. And I'm going to try to elevate it a little bit more. Maybe I'll play music. Maybe I'll light a non-toxic candle. You know, whatever it is, like, can we make the experiences nicer? I'm a fan of like in the kitchen, because especially with the food blog that I ran for so long, like I have really pretty pottery. So I'll just like eat at it. I'm like, this is just like a beautiful low bowl, and I'm going to elevate my lunch by eating in it. And it's just, it slows us down. It makes the experience nicer. Can you go eat outside? You know, can we just be humans again? About human beings, not human doings, right?
Yes. Oh, no. Those are great, great tips, great points. I love all your suggestions, too, in regards to the nervous system. And I love that you started off with just like slowing down, creating more joy. I coach on that all the time, too. Like, have a list of things that bring you joy, put it up somewhere, and try to do them. And it can be something so like go for a walk, call a friend, listen to a podcast while you're meal prepping, like anything that's just going to make you feel better, happy, smile. Because I think we get so busy as adults, we're like, we're depleted of joy. It's in, especially as like busy moms, when you're kind of doing everything for everybody else all the time, you know, you don't realize. Yeah, it's nice to take a bath at the end of the night. Yes, you got your workout in, but like, what about like midday or like after that client call? Like something that's just going to bring you joy too, just to help bring the nervous system down. And I know you have your own cookbook too, right?
I do, yeah.
Tell me about that. What inspired it, and like, who is this cookbook for?
So anyone who wants to heal their gut, this is for you. And if you're Hashis, you want to heal your gut. So I was approached by a publisher in 2020. And what else was I doing, you know? So I was like, absolutely, I want to do this. It was like a dream come true. I photographed it. I developed all the recipes with my little baby daughter at the time, my first. And that was my like 2020, 2021 project. That's when it was published. It's great. It has like a 2-week reset meal plan in it and really yummy recipes. Because something that I love to do, especially being from New York City and eating really great food all the time, is I always was looking to have my cake and eat it too. Like, how can I replace that Thai takeout with some really delicious paleo food or cultural foods that I grew up with? How can I recreate that? So that's how a lot of my recipes are from that book, especially. And they're anti-inflammatory and really
I love that. That sounds like a wonderful cookbook. And I love that there's a 2-week reset. What are some of your favorite gut healing foods that you love to eat, especially if someone's like in those beginning stages of healing the gut? Like, what's your go-tos and what's your advice around that?
Oh my God, soup. Just like really good homemade soup, like chicken. I mean, something that I do in the winter is eat at least every other weekend, if not more, I will do a chicken soup or like a Greek lemon chicken soup, something. And we have it throughout the week. We all love it. Like, it's just so nourishing to get the broth, to get the veggies, to get the meat. And it's so easy to digest. So especially if you are just really in the throes of healing and your digestion feels like a mess, I love that. I love that stuff. The other thing is anything that's like very cut up, like hash, meat hash, ground meat, anything like that. It's easy to cook. It's easy to prep really quickly. You can do shredded veggies or really finely cut up or riced veggies and make a nice little dish. Make it yummy. Put some coconut aminos instead of soy sauce. Put your favorite seasonings and it's going to taste so good. Like, you can't go wrong with that and it's going to be easier to digest. So those are some of my favorites to lean on.
I love that. And like, are you all-inclusive of veggies? Do you love like a good variety of veggies for all the fiber and for gut healing too? And like, obviously more cooked, steamed, warm, we can absorb those better too. Nobody told me that. I remember when I was like fixing my leaky gut and I was just eating like raw salads all the time.
Oh my goodness, yes. And you're like, why don't I feel good?
And then it clicked and I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, 101, steam and cook. And like, I love all the warming foods. I crave them so much. And I think like when your body likes something, you crave it, you want more of it, you know, it needs it. It's very, very healing. So I love that. Very good. Okay. So what do you think makes your approach to food different from kind of what's already out there?
You know, I think my approach to food has changed so much too since becoming a mother. I have a lot less time, even as someone who worked so much and all the things. And then you got all these new preferences in the house. So now I obviously understand what parents are up against. So I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. So, you know, definitely one will eat this and the other one wants to eat, you know, and I'm just like, oh my goodness. So just the easier, the simpler, the better. So this is why, like, for example, something that I'll give my clients, especially is templates, especially when I know that they're dealing with the same thing at home. And it's like, this is what your plate needs to look like. Here's a bunch of variables you can cook or switch in. Everyone wins, you know, and you've always got something and you have a great pantry and a great freeze. Like, I'm a fan of frozen veggies and, you know, yeah, anything that can make it easier. It's sometimes it's better because it's like they flash freeze it right when it's fresh and it. Yeah. So I'm a fan of like exactly what I was saying, like, hey, I'm going to batch cook some soup or things like that on the weekend. But then I'm just going to keep all my other meals really simple, high protein, some veggies, some starch, like a sweet potato, or I can do rice now. I couldn't for quite a while. But little things like that, that it's just like, these are easy to throw together. I feel confident about them. And then when I want to eat seasonally, because that's so important for gut health, I will just say to myself, that doesn't mean I'm overhauling my diet each season. It just means, hey, I'm going to pick up maybe one fruit and one vegetable each week from the farmer's market, especially spring and summer here. We have like cute farmer's markets that I know are seasonal. I'm going to do some radishes and strawberries in May or asparagus or like whatever it is. And I want to like flood my diet with that a little bit because nature provides. It's there for a reason. In the summer, tomatoes, they help you with sun damage. Like, who knew? Nature did. So it's like critical things like that, that you're going to get different microbes, beneficial microbes fed throughout the year, and you're going to benefit from it. And that's a way you can include more diversity in your diet, but without feeling like it needs to be so complicated or you need to learn 50 new recipes.
Or that you need to have like 55 veggies on your plate to like be living your best life.
I don't do that. I've never done that. I know that those recommend like eat the, and it's like, that is beautiful. If you can, wonderful, you go for it. I cannot most of the time. So it's more so just like, oh, I got some purple and green and orange today. Good for me. You know, that's it. Like, I'm fine. It's all good. My blood looks pretty good. So I think it's okay.
You know, something we both kind of touched on, but as we wrap up, I wanted to get your thoughts on it too, because autoimmune can feel a little isolating. And because we go through, I think most of us go through a period of elimination with our diet, it can start to feel very stuck in our diet. And we can sometimes eliminate too much. How do you know when to start rebuilding that trust with your body? Meaning when to introduce foods back in so we're not feeling like we're limiting too much. Like, what's your thoughts on that piece of it? Because I've never dived into that with anyone before.
Yeah, this is a big piece of my practice because a lot of people come to me after already trying diets like autoimmune paleo, the AIP diet, low FODMAP, all these things. I am not a fan of going too strict for too long. Some people, absolutely, like, you got to clean up your act. You got to like get a lot of food out and you should know how to home cook. And there's so many pros to it. But I see that perfectionism creeping. I need to eat this way. The demonizing of foods, whole foods, like we're demonizing beans and, you know, grains that can still be good eventually. It's just you can't handle them right now. Like, let's just have that context. So a common mistake I see is that people try to DIY everything. There's so much information out there, right? They're going to go Google, oh, all I have to do is go on this diet. I'm going to just go follow this meal plan or do these recipes. And then 60 days later, 90 days later, how come I can't get off this? How come I can't reintroduce? I feel terrible. Or I have no, like, I reintroduce and like nothing happens and my labs look terrible still and I don't feel well still. And so I just want to say, like, diet can't fix everything. Absolutely not. It's always that we need to keep lightening the load on our body. And we want to reintroduce sooner than later. We really do, alongside healing the gut. So if you are only doing an elimination diet, you've got half the picture there. We need to be healing the gut so that you can overcome food sensitivities, so that you're building resilience, and so that we can eat that more diverse diet to feed the good guys. Because what I'll see a lot with GI MAP stool tests and all these other things, people have been on AIP for a long time, low FODMAP, whatever. They're missing so much beneficial bacteria. They're eating the same chicken and plantain chips every single day. We're creatures of habit. And especially if we are highly reactive to foods, we're just going to eat the safe foods over and over again. And so that's rough, right, on the body. So we eventually need to get to a place where it's like, if your diet is shrinking, that's a symptom that something is still not healed. And so we need to work on deeper healing and reintroduce easier. And one tip I'll leave you with for reintroductions is, like, don't have a full dose of something, like, especially if it's a veggie. And since we were just talking about hashes and frozen veggies, what I'll say is, like, hey, get some frozen veggie packets. You're not even going to have a full dose of any of those vegetables because they're all mixed up. Maybe it's carrot and cauliflower and broccoli. I don't know, whatever it is. And saute that in. And then this is how you kind of micro dose yourself with a FODMAP, with a nightshade. You know, where you're just getting little bits and retraining the body again of, like, it's okay.
To, like, build resilience. You want to build resilience around it.
Exactly. Because the thing with food sensitivities and inflammation is, like, because your gut's leaky. So whatever you're eating a lot of, you will lose. You will get sensitive to it. It's still slipping out into the bloodstream. It's not necessarily the food that is the bad guy.
It's not the food itself. It's the lining of the gut that's open. Yeah.
And even when people talk about anti-nutrients, lectins and whatever, there's also nutrients. Yeah, it's a plant. It needs a way to fight off predators, basically. So it has an anti-nutrient, but it also has a nutrient in it, or nutrients. And so we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater all the time. We need to realize, like, context, guys, your body needs help to heal, to build more resilience, and then maybe you can handle it fine eventually. Maybe not every day you're going to eat rice. Let's say it's rice. Because for a while I was like, wait, I grew up eating rice. Am I never going to eat it again? Because
I know. I feel the same way. Yeah.
I felt so inflamed from it. I'm like, oh my God, did I always feel this way? Like, it was wild. And I just missed it sometimes. You know, just the mouthfeel. It's like cozy. Like, you just miss it sometimes. And now I'm fine with it. I can have it a few times a week. Nothing happens. Nothing at all. Just get some good fiber. It's easy.
I think that what you're saying is so incredibly important. Again, and I hate to bring it back to social media, but, like, when you're on social media and you see, like, carnivore diet, everybody do carnivore, you know, and it's like, yeah, carnivore can be very great for a period of time, years and years. I know, at least for me, like, I was doing more paleo, I would say, like, more paleo, and I went too low carb for too long. And then it started to work against me. Like, I started to gain weight and my hormones started to, like, become a little bit of a roller coaster. And I'm sure it wasn't great for my thyroid at the end of the day too.
Yeah, it's not, because you need carbs to convert the T4 to T3.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So I know for me, I was like, oh, like, again, it's all part of the journey of like figuring it out and like what works and what doesn't work, but also like fostering that metabolism for our metabolic health, right? If sometimes when we go too low with something or we stay on a certain diet for too long, we're hurting our metabolism and we want it to be agile. We want to burn fat and carb. We want to move in and out of different metabolic states all the time, right? And like foster that kind of environment. So I think what you're saying is so important. Like there's a time and place for everything. It's not forever. I also feel like just intuitively, we should be shifting how we're eating all the time. You know, I'm 41, you know, how I eat now is very different than how I ate at 37, you know, and 35 and 33, and my activity level is different, and I'm a mom, and my body's changing.
Or from when you were postpartum to, yeah, from breastfeeding to not. It's like, you know what I want to say that I think we're kind of like circling around? We just said we see people that are still either too overwhelmed and frozen to know what to do, or we know we were never taught this growing up. Most of us were never taught how do you build a balanced plate, because also many of us grew up on the pyramid. So what we were told was false. So it's like, you're taking uneducated people. I was uneducated on that. Like we were all uneducated on our bodies and on nutrition. And you're saying, hey, go on this elimination diet. What could go wrong? What could go wrong? Right? Like we're going to maybe overdo it, or we're going to now demonize the foods that were on the red side of the list. Or whatever, because we didn't even know how to balance our blood sugar. Or, you know, like I'll see, someone could have a beautiful AIP paleo food journal, but they're skipping meals, but there's not enough protein. Their blood sugar's a mess. And so, or they're not getting enough diversity or whatever. And so it's like building blocks. Like, let's learn what that plate needs to look like for you. What's breakfast? What's lunch? What's dinner? What's going to set you up? How do you also listen to your body cues, because I'm not right. Your body's right on what it needs right now, because your body during this healing phase is different than the body a year from now. Like you're saying, that's what bioindividuality is, not just you as a person, but also where you are in your journey and what your body needs right now. And even in a season, I probably will eat different in summer than I will when I'm in winter.
As you should.
Exactly. And so there's little room for that nuance. We are very much good, bad, black, white thinking so much because it's easier to just make decisions that way. But there's room for nuance and trusting. You asked me, how do you trust your body then to reintroduce foods? When we start trusting our body, flex that trust muscle a little bit, the symptom isn't the slap on the wrist anymore. You know, I remember I used to get bloated for something and get pissed. Like, oh, I thought this was healthy. Right? And it's like, well, why did I get bloated? I rushed. This, that, whatever. And it's just data. And we don't need to like constantly be getting revved up by all of these things and listen to our body, you know? So there's nuance. It's not that perfect black and white answer. I know people hate that. But when you just kind of let it go, when you just let it go, like let that perfection go, it will be so much easier.
And you'll feel your shoulders come down from your ears.
It's regulating. Yeah. You don't have to feel dysregulated around food of like, but this person said carnivore and this person said vegan. Oh, I give up. No. Delete social media for 2 seconds. Calm down. Your body will tell you. It tells you all the time. But are you listening? When I teach people how to listen to their hunger and satiation cues with mindful eating, it's like, I remember vividly someone told me like, oh my God, my stomach growled for the first time the other day. I realized I never get hungry enough to let my stomach growl. I just eat. I was told to eat every 2 hours. So I do. I'm like,
I know. That's like every 2 hour thing. I'm like, no, your body needs time to empty.
That's what Western medicine will tell you to do, blood sugar balance.
Every 2 hours, and that's going to help your metabolism. That's how you burn fat. And it's like, no, you need, that will spike your blood sugar. You need time to feel that hunger.
I know. They did that when we went too low protein and we were eating so high carb because everyone was hypoglycemic and no one could make it more than 2 hours. So that's my favorite too, when people are like, I'm a grazer. No, you are hypoglycemic.
Yes.
You can go longer without food if you are eating the right. It only takes like a week. it doesn't even take that long, you know, to start feeling the effects and feeling the shift, which is incredible. Body is incredible. It'll do it.
Well, I think you're incredible. This was such a great conversation. Honestly, I could talk to you for hours. It's so enlightening and it's just validating in so many different ways. But I can tell that you just are so passionate about helping people and living in this autoimmune world and just helping people navigate through it because it's so nuanced. It's so tricky. So if anyone's listening and they want to work with you, like tell everyone where they can find you and what your like one-on-one coaching really looks like too.
Yeah, I'd love to. And thank you so much for saying that. It was so sweet. So you can find me at foodbymars.com. I have all the information about our coaching. You can apply to work with us. I have a team of incredible nutritionists who've been with me for years. And I oversee everything. We do that one-on-one piece where everything is tailored to you. Your supplements, nutrition, lifestyle pieces, everything. And we take you through it and coach you bit by bit. We tell you what labs we'd want to do, you know, all that stuff. So we are really thorough, especially in the onboarding and intake process, to make it really custom to you. And then one of my favorite parts of my my program is called the N2 Method. One of my favorite parts is we do have a group element as well, because you said it perfectly, Michelle, you nailed it. This is lonely. Your friends and family don't get it. They want you to feel better and they want you to heal, but they don't understand why you're gluten-free now. They don't understand why your pits stink because you're trying new non-toxic deodorant. They don't understand why you're going the extra mile that most people won't. And it gets easier to be consistent when you are with your people in community. So we have the one-on-one check-ins, but then we also offer group check-ins, which I lead most of. And you are just with the most incredible women dealing with autoimmune, chronic gut issues, all this stuff, and we're being asked to change the same or similar things. So we all come together on it. We cheer each other on. People find like best friends in there. So it's great. And then, yeah, you can connect with me online. I'm Food by Mars everywhere. So Instagram, TikTok. I'm trying to do like a YouTube situation here lately. And just DM me. I don't bite. You can let me know how you're doing and what's going on.
I love that. I'll link everything in the show notes too, so you guys can contact her. I'll include the freebie that you were saying. I think like the
Hashimoto's cheat sheet. That's a great place to start too. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But thank you so much. You have been such a wealth of information and this has been such a great podcast episode and so much fun talking with you, Allison. You are wonderful.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much. And so are you. Seriously, the impact you're having is so needed and so incredible. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.